Welcome to Banking on KC. I'm your host, Kelly Scanlon. Thank you for joining us. With us on this episode is Ashley Huff, the president and CEO at Unbound, an international nonprofit that delivers more than $100 million in personalized support each year for children, elders, and their families who live in poverty in Latin America, Asia, and Africa. Welcome, Ashley.
Thanks a lot, Kelly. It's great to be here.
Here we sit, kicking off Women's History Month, and you and Unbound actually had your own historic announcement to make recently. You were recently appointed as a president and CEO of the organization, so congratulations on that.
Thanks a lot.
What does it mean to you to be the first woman to lead Unbound? And we're talking about a 43-year history here.
Well, first, just starting personally, this is a dream job for me. If I think back over nearly 25 years of a career so far, and the ups and downs and the windy path that led me to this place, I think about the times when I didn't really know, you know, each decision made, what was going to be on the next side, what was around the corner. And it all worked out, trusting my instincts, trusting my decision-making, my guts. I get to pursue a life, a career in service in an international context and doing it from here in Kansas City where my family is based to raise my sons. So an absolute dream. When I think, though, in terms of women and really being honored to be someone that can chip away at that glass ceiling, I was looking the other day at statistics on women leaders and nonprofits and saw a statistic that for large nonprofits, those over 50 million, about 20% of them are led by women CEOs. Now, in the nonprofit space, 75% of the workforce in nonprofits are women. So there's a
Not in leadership,
but in general, but there's a continued, you know, imbalance. But to be able to serve and sort of, again, be someone that can be an example for others is, I'm very grateful for. Now at Unbound, I am the first woman president and CEO, which is wonderful, but I follow along a history of women leadership. One of our founders of the Henson family was one of the sisters, Nadine Henson Pierce. We've had many Henson Pierce and their relatives serve in various leadership roles within Unbound. But looking across our project countries, we work in 17 project countries right now. And within countries, there are several sort of mini projects. So, for example, in Kenya, we have three projects, geographic projects. 70% of our leaders of those projects are women. So they're sort of mini CEOs in the field, and many of them have been with Unbound 20, 25 years. They're the leaders. And then the real leaders at Unbound are our mothers. Unbound is an organization that's dedicated to walking alongside the poor and the marginalized. We primarily do that through sponsorship of children and youth. The sponsorship money goes directly to a family's bank account. And as most people know, the CEO of most families is the mother. And who has led at Unbound for the past 40 years are the mothers. We have something we call mothers groups. The mothers get together. This started organically in India in 2001. We now have 12,500
worldwide
of these groups of women, of groups of primarily mothers. Occasionally it could be a grandmother, an aunt. There are fathers involved.
So how many are within each of these 12,500 groups?
About 30 women.
Okay, so we're talking about a lot of women leading these. Yeah,
it's a lot of women. And they get together. They are decision makers. They get together and do leadership, savings and loans. They support each other. And these are the real leaders of Unbound. So if I think about myself, yes, I have a great position now and a great role I'm very proud of, but I'm really standing on the shoulders of a lot of women throughout Unbound's history.
They're leading their families that are setting that example and trying to set their children up for opportunity.
We've done studies of this and showing the significant impact on their own empowerment, ability to see themselves as decision makers, having control, and being agents of change. And hopefully sometime later in this show, I'll talk about our Agents of Change program, where they actually do change projects for the community around them. They lead and develop, and we only provide the funding. The rest is them. So they've got an I can, we can, I will mentality that results from these mothers. mothers groups.
What incredible stories you must have. But again, you have your own story. And as you said, it's full of twists and turns. You have a background in corporate law. You have worked in other areas of international development. So how do you think those unique experiences of your own have prepared you for this day and for this leadership role at Unbound?
Interesting to think about. And when I spoke about kind of the twists and turns and the ups and downs, I start with family and my upbringing from my parents. I always envisioned a service career. And so when I, from law school, went to a law firm, really intended to stay for only a few years to pay back some law school debt, and thought I'd pretty quickly move to Missouri and pursue a career in public service. One thing led to another, and I found myself there for nearly 8 years.
It's funny how that happens
and made partners. So when I didn't think I would be there very long at all, then at the moment that I made partner and realized that I really wasn't doing what I was meant to be doing in life, I had a lot of people at that time say, "What are you crazy? You just made partner and now you're going to leave?" But it was at a wonderful law firm called Alston & Bird, was really blessed. They allowed me to take about a year and a half sabbatical. I'd been doing corporate finance work and went with an economist named Jeffrey Sachs, moved to Kenya for a year and a half, and worked on foreign investment. And it was my legal background that allowed me to do the work. That triggered my entire career in international development, most of which has been in Africa. I always say a legal degree is a wonderful degree to have for problem solving. I have to deal with a lot of complex information and across 17 project countries and lots of moving parts. The building blocks of who I am and leading to this position really date back to childhood with my parents and a life of service and a life of valuing cultures, other people, and acceptance.
In addition to announcing you as the first woman CEO in its 43-year history, another milestone that Unbound has reached, its 1 millionth sponsored friend. So what's the significance of that achievement, and how does it reflect on Unbound's impact over the years?
Yeah, it is significant. 1 million. In 2021, we announced that we had delivered over $2 billion of financial support through these individual sponsorship. What is significant about this is that we are talking one by one by one. It's individual sponsors making lives in each individual child, their mother, their family. Our founder, Bob Hinson, had a quote that I love. He said, a small amount of money from a whole lot of people equals a whole lot of help and a whole lot of responsibility. And I really think of that's the beauty and the power of sponsorship is that ordinary people, you and me, can really make a difference in people's lives. But unfortunately, it's not enough. Today in the world, 1 in 10 people live in extreme poverty, defined as living under $2.15 a day. That number in places like Sub-Saharan Africa and Southeast Asia is only getting worse. So my goal as president and CEO with Unbound is another 1 million families sponsored, impacted in a fraction of the time.
So not another 43 years.
Not another 43 years. Something that keeps me up every night is an urgency and anxiety about how to reach the next million.
You can pledge and it's a small amount each month and it's just automatically taken out of your checking account. So you just sit back and the magic happens.
$40 a month, that's the average sponsorship. That's not insignificant for people, I realize that, but today I went through and had a large latte and after tip it was $9. So
right.
$40 for a family that's living on nearly $2 a day is a huge amount of money. And as I mentioned, what it also does, it brings you into the Unbound community. So there's a multiplier effect starting with these mothers groups and the savings and loan opportunities and other access, other funds that Unbound has available. We've got scholarship funds and critical needs funds for when disaster hits a family and there's other ways. But it starts with the $40 and opens up really a world of opportunity and hope and encouragement for these families.
If you're going to reach another million in a fraction of the time, as you say, you're going to have to get innovative. How do you envision fostering innovation within Unbound to accomplish that goal and perhaps others that you see a need for?
First and foremost, the innovation that's been driven at Unbound in 43 years has come from the families and our project teams. And this is something that also makes us, I think, rather unique in the international development world, certainly, is we don't dictate the innovation from Kansas. The families are the best ones to know what they need. We have over 1,500 staff in the project sites, half of whom were formerly sponsored individuals themselves. Many of them have social work degrees. So these are experts in families and individuals. The things that I've described around mothers groups and savings and loan activities, our Agents of Change program, all happened organically at the site, driven by what the families need. So over 40 years now, we have kind of quietly been innovating at the site. My role, I feel, as CEO is to provide the enabling environment for that to happen, to connect the threads, to build the network, and then help us start to turn outward to grow our base of not only sponsors, but look at other sources of revenue that we have not tapped into before. Without changing who we are, we receive very little, actually, foundation money. We haven't in the past applied for grants. We receive major gifts, but they come from our sponsors. And I think we've got a world of opportunity in seeking different funding for our existing programs that I hope to tap into to accelerate our growth. And one example of this, again, one of the things I love the most about Unbound are the mothers groups. So we are now looking at the possibility for funding of whole mothers groups at a time. So mothers groups have formed via individual sponsorship. So a family gets sponsored, the mother joins a group. What if we put the 30 mothers together from the outset, find foundation funding, major donor funding to fund a group of women over 10 years. They still get their direct cash transfer. It funds the program activities. They meet monthly and they do a lot of training and leadership development. It funds sort of the intellectual property blueprint, the framework around these mothers groups. And then there's other activities that could be funded, such as matching of their savings, capacity building around the cooperatives, but looking at ways to fund and sort of bring, quote, these mothers groups online quicker, you know, 30 women at a time versus one by one by one.
You've mentioned Agents of Change program a couple of different times. Tell us more about that.
So Agents of Change program as a funding program is a few years old. The mothers identified a need in these mothers groups and realized that they were very fortunate. They were getting cash transfer, financial resources, they were getting the support of Unbound, and they were looking around at their community and saying, well, what else can we do for the community? So we have set up a program. The mothers themselves come up with a proposal. So they look around their community and identify a need and put a proposal together. It's on average about $500. It might be water for the school, it might be a girl's latrine, it might be street lighting, whatever they decide. The mothers determine the project, they put the proposal together, they put the budget together, and they apply to an Unbound local committee that's also made up of mothers or family members for a grant. We put these online on the unbound.org website in December for the first time. We had 75 of them online. They sold out within a week.
So anybody can go online and say, I'll be the $500 funder.
Yep, it's $575 because we add overhead to it. And you can go and you can look at a country and look at if some of them are infrastructure, education, water, and you can fund an Agents of Change project. But these are all, again, not determined by Unbound. These are all determined by the mothers, mostly the mothers within the community, and it's their way of giving back to the community. And again, it enforces their own leadership and their own sense of possibility.
This is an incredible program. One other thing that is really notable about Unbound is that, you know, a lot of people, Unbound has a tremendous track record. You direct more than 90% of the monies towards program support. And so as a CEO, that sounds like it's really probably a difficult thing to do. You know, there's administrative costs, there's all kinds of things, transportation. How are you going to be able to maintain that efficiency for the long term?
It is significant. It's very important to our sponsor and donor base. Actually, a lot of sponsors come to us. They search the most effective, efficient, top-rated nonprofits, and we appear on the list. So that is a it's very important to me. It's very important to our board. Something that's unique about the way, the historical way that Unbound has brought in sponsorships is through Catholic Church audiences. The Henson family and their friend Jerry Toll, it was a lay Catholic family. Two of them, Bob Henson and Jerry Toll, had been missionaries in Latin America. When they formed Unbound, it was a way of giving back and connecting with families first in Latin America. And the underpinning of Unbound is Catholic social doctrine and the dignity of the person. We have about 30 Catholic priests, mostly retired or semi-retired priests, who go around the country during the weekend. They do what we call weekend appeals. They visit a local parish. They do the full mass and deliver the homily, and they talk about Unbound in their homily, and then people go to the front of the church and pick up a folder and sponsor. And about 70% of our sponsorships have come through the weekend appeals. It's incredibly effective, incredibly cost efficient. We don't have an old army of fundraising experts. This is something that I intend to grow, but also we're working on diversifying that base because we realize the appeal of Unbound beyond, you know, I'm Methodist and it appeals to me in my own faith like it would many and to other generations. So we have a really cost-effective fundraising model, and that's where a lot of organizations, of course, tend to spend a lot of money. The other thing, you know, we're continually looking at ways of reducing our costs.
Given the current global challenges, I mean, take a pen and put it anywhere on a map, it seems like there's a challenge somewhere in this world today. How do you see Unbound's role evolving to meet the poor and marginalized communities, especially in those areas where we see so many challenges?
Quite a few ways, and I think about this all the time, and part of our problem is to try and also be focused because we can't do everything. First is just general poverty elimination. As mentioned, that 1 in 10 people live in extreme poverty today. I really believe we are a direct cash transfer model. I really believe that if you look at the effectiveness, and there's been hundreds of academic studies over the past 5 years on cash as a direct cash transfers as a poverty alleviation tool, giving people the control over how to spend, designing the programs for themselves. And cash transfers show better program outcomes in nutrition than nutrition programs, or in business development than business development programs. So continuing one by one to grow and get the financial resources that people need to start to sort of climb the ladder out of poverty is the first. The second is in gender. If you look at gender indicators across the world, especially in the countries where we work, nothing is on track. The UN had a study recently that less than 1% of the women in the world live in countries that have good indicators of gender empowerment and gender parity. Less than 1%. If you look at our model, our mothers groups, our the control, the empowerment that is given to women, and empowerment is just this the beginning. What it really does is sets them up for program outcomes in education, in how they direct spending for businesses, for their livelihoods. So we can really start to move the needle, putting more focus on these women's groups and on women's economic development within these groups. The third and the fourth area in where we're headed in terms of challenges in the world over the next 25 years, two ends of the spectrum. One is a growing youth bulge, and the other is growing elder population. Our children are sponsored as long as they're pursuing an education, and that's defined broadly. It could be vocational, but as long as they're in education. So we have sponsors sponsoring youth all the way through university and postgraduate. And we also have a scholarship program. So over the next couple of years, along with other with partnerships, I would like to really look at growing the impact of our scholarships, of our youth sponsorships, and really connecting them from education to the job market. Because what we're seeing, for example, in Kenya, where we have a lot of educated youth that are coming out with engineering degrees and computer science degrees, then they can't find jobs. And so really focusing on that part of our sponsorship, that part of our sponsored families and sponsored youth over the coming years. And then on the flip side, elder population, I think right now there's about 8% of the world are elderly, 65 and older, and that's going to grow to over 16%. A lot of them will be in the countries that where we work, in Africa and Southeast Asia. We're the only sponsorship organization that has a program for elders. And our program for elders, we're right now led by our project teams, are working on that, looking at that model. And really with the elders, a lot of them have different forms of caregivers around them. Some are families, but not always. Some of them are completely alone. So we're innovating in the field and looking at the support of caregivers, the support of a community of elders, and what that means for them, and hoping that, just like with the mothers groups, several years down the road, we'll have a sort of an elder and caregiver model that we can show the world that can be replicated and used, you know, even here in the United States.
Are there any new partnerships or collaborations on the horizon for Unbound that you're excited about?
Partnerships is an area that I do want to grow. We've been doing it a bit alone over the past 40 years, but there is one new one over the past couple of years that is a significant one. It's a foundation out of Paraguay called Fundación Paraguaya, started by a man named Martin Burt. He wrote a book called Who Owns Poverty? If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it.
Who Owns Poverty?
Who Owns Poverty? It's a mutual meeting of the minds and the way we think about families and the dignity of the person in poverty. He invented, and his foundation invented, a tool called Poverty Stoplight that we're in our second year using within our projects. It's a technology tool. It's a self-evaluation of a family's poverty level based on stoplights. So red being extreme poverty, yellow being poverty, green being no poverty, against 50 indicators. So it's everything from nutrition to domestic violence. And a family, based on images, and a family looks at that tool and they rate themselves. So again, getting back to each individual family looks at this and assesses their own lives. And they get a life map out of that. And they look and they see where, you know, we're doing pretty well in access to potable water, but we're not doing so well in savings. And they determine, based on this life map, what their goals are for the coming 6 to 1 year. To give you an example, I met a woman in Kenya named Evangeline, who is a single mother, a farmer, and a smallholder farmer. And she showed me her life map. She was on her second year, and she showed me what she had prioritized over the past year. Increased savings, and that's what many of our families prioritize. An improved cook stove and access to information. Now, what's interesting about these indicators is you might not think about access to information, but, you know, in her case, as a farmer in an area of Kenya that suffers, you know, that is constantly suffering drought, how important that was. So 1 year later, she brought me into her house, and she had, through savings and through the Unbound, you know, access to some loans through the groups, she had purchased herself a small little TV that it hooked up to electricity, so she now was accessing local Kenyan TV stations. She had an improved cook stove, so she was no longer cooking over an open fire, and then the savings was still coming along. The pride that she had in not only setting those goals, but achieving those goals, those are something, you know, myself and the team in Kansas never could have said, this is what you need, and here's how you're going to get here. She did that herself. And we're replicating that over 270,000 families. So this is a significant partnership with Fundación Paraguaya to scale up, to continue using this tools, to continue showing, first and foremost, for the families, but then we're able to show at the group level and at the community level how Unbound is impacting them, how people are starting to change their lives. Another example at the community level that's pretty interesting, in Bolivia, after the families started doing their poverty stoplight for the first year, our project, from the data, we saw that many of the families prioritizing trash pickup, a place for sanitation, something that very hard to deal with individually. But then as a community, what they did was they got together and they could see that with all that they all had prioritized this, they could get together as a, you know, as a political force to work with the local government, work with their agents of change funding, work with their own savings and loans to start to address a community's solutions. So super exciting tool, matches exactly what we do Unbound in terms of, that's our program model, working with each individual family with a great partner in with Martine Burt and his foundation.
That's incredible. And you talk about the pride that this woman who had the cook stove now and the television had, and you talk about the mothers groups, 12,500 of them across the world. And it's not just the mother's sense of pride, but it's the example too that they are setting, the model they are for their children. It's a generational kind of shift.
Absolutely.
That is happening.
There's hundreds of these stories, and you really, you start to see at an individual and then at a group and community level, you start to see how change can really happen. Generational change can start to take place.
So looking to the future, how do you envision Unbound's role in the broader context of international development? You're one piece of it, a very important piece, but that broader context of international development. And what legacy do you hope to build as its leader?
Great question. I mentioned Martine Burt. He was visiting us at our headquarters here in Kansas City a few months ago. As we were talking about Unbound and my vision for the future, I said, I want us to be known in the international development circles. We're actually not known. We've been part of our humble roots, part of our focus inward on growing within our sponsorships, and haven't done much to build our awareness. And the first thing I need to do is, with the team that I have here and as well as across our project countries, is to change that and actually participate in the conversation. I consider us kind of the best kept secret in international development. And along a couple of lines, first is the power of direct cash transfers. I've mentioned studies that are out there, and there have been, and a lot of pockets of studies here and there. Well, we've been doing this for 40 years, and we're doing it across 17 countries. We have incredible network built up and trust within communities. And I think we can contribute a lot to the knowledge of the power of direct cash transfers to alleviate poverty, moving from institutions down to the family. And so want to contribute to that direct cash transfers, again, looking at individual poverty solutions at an individual level. There are needs at community levels or needs at national level, but we have a lot to contribute at an individual level, and I hope to contribute, you know, data-wise, conversation-wise. We've done a small project recently on price index, and we use Mexico, our families in Mexico. The consumer price index in many countries are developed from a basket of goods that are set by policymakers in the capital cities, and they're not at all times reflective of families' real purchasing powers and what they're purchasing. So we've been working on, we call it the Unbound Basic Needs Price Index. We've been working on that in Mexico. So really kind of changing the conversation, changing the policy landscape, changing the thinking around how you do development, or contributing to that based on the work that we do at the family level. And Poverty Stoplight is certainly a tool for that. Then I'm hoping that our mothers group model can be something that could be replicated by other organizations, by governments, that will want to do Unbound type of mothers groups, as well as our elders program and our sort of youth scholarship to jobs pipeline that I hope we can build a great model for over the coming years. For me, my legacy, by the time I retire, and I hope this is the job I retire in, that we have surpassed 2 million families.
Doubling that number.
Yeah.
Great goals to have. Ashley, thank you for all the great work that you do, that your team does. And those mothers groups, my goodness, what a force they are throughout the world. And thank you for taking the time out of what's obviously a very busy schedule and coming to share the story with us today.
Well, thanks for the opportunity. I love talking about Unbound and spreading the word.
This is Joe Close, president of Country Club Bank. Thank you to Ashley Huft, CEO of Unbound, for joining us on this episode of Banking on KC. Ashley's story from a career in corporate law to leading a global nonprofit, reflects a commitment to service and innovation. Her vision for Unbound includes expanding direct cash transfers, empowering women through mothers groups, and building a youth-to-jobs pipeline. These initiatives are not just about the aid itself. They're about enabling individuals and communities to define and achieve their own goals. At Country Club Bank, we share a similar goal of empowering our Kansas City community. We believe in the power of individual efforts contributing to a greater cause, much like the many sponsors who have supported Unbound's mission. Together, we're building a brighter future rooted in compassion, innovation, and opportunity for all. Thanks for tuning in this week. We're banking on you, Kansas City. Country Club Bank, member FDIC.